Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your Monday edition of the Kings of Anglia podcast. It is, of course, also welcome to Groundhog Day. We've been here before. Same old story. Ipswich Town competed. They showed they're capable of living with teams at this level. And then they lost a fine margins affair, trademark Stuart Watson, at Crystal Palace on Saturday, which means, unfortunately, because Wolves got a draw out of Everton, they're now 6 points away from safety, essentially 7 with goal difference. And of course, Wolves have got Southampton this weekend. So you'd have to say they're favourites of picking up more points there. So friends, today's going to be a bit of a group therapy session, I reckon. We're going to try and pick out the bones of some of the wider themes emerging from the game at the weekend and some very interesting comments from Mr. Luke Wolfenden. And to help me do all that, my two young friends, the young guns, Rossi and AJ. Rossi, you're wearing a very fetching green hoodie today. It's not your colour. I'd say it suits you, actually, my friend. How are you?
I'm very well. It's not like a Norwich green, ladies and gentlemen. It's like a nice khaki green. I don't know.
It's not green. Really khaki. It's a rich green.
Yeah, and obviously it is my boys Adidas, so shout out to them.
I should have known.
More merchandise sent, please, Adidas, if you want me to keep plugging you. But no, good. Story of the season. I think we should just repeat an old episode, really. Just put it in.
Make our life easier, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah. AJ, how are you, my young, handsome friend?
Oh, wow. Very kind. I'm good. Yeah. I booed Ross as he walked onto the screen this morning for wearing green. In fairness, yeah, the green is okay. There was once, I think we might have told the story before, there was once a bit we were recording together. I can't remember if it was FPL or a boot room or something, where we both sat down and it dawned on me as we were about to click record that I had green on and he had yellow on. And I said, no, one of us is going to have to change. We can't do that because the comments section's not going to be kind to us. So, yeah, you've got to be careful with your colours. Stu's learnt from that trip to Wolves as well. That was a fun one. But, yeah, all good.
Okay, right then. Here we go then, friends. Let's break this down, shall we? Ipswich Town lost at Crystal Palace on Saturday. AJ, we might as well stay with you because, as I alluded to there in the intro, it feels to me like a game that we've seen about 65% of the season. You know, Town have been, again, they've been banging it, to use a player's phrase, banging it, bang at the races. And then, unfortunately, I get, again, similar in a way to the first game of Crystal Palace, the only moment of real quality in the game wins Crystal Palace the game. So do you want to give us your thoughts? And then we'll hear from Kieran McKenna just on your kind of opening thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen that exact game probably at least 7 or 8 times this season. And that's probably only thinking about ones that have one goal margins in it. We've seen others where Town have been banging it and it's maybe been 2 or 3 moments of quality and it ends up in a bigger margin. But you still come away saying, well, actually, there were positives. There were players that played quite well in that and they were competitive and they were unlucky in certain areas. And it's kind of a rinse and repeat and trying to figure out a way to stop that, especially since the turn of the year, hasn't it been? That's really been where it's been painful, and why that is and how you change that. We've sat here and we've discussed it, and I'm sure Kieran McKenna and the players and all that discuss the same kind of things as well, and trying to find a solution is kind of, I think, sending us all into a descent into madness. And yeah, this was one of those games. It was frustrating. It was good, of course, to see Ipswich compete. I'd rather have them go to an away game and be competitive and lose rather than getting blown out of the water, for example. But that does then make it more frustrating, especially given the timing that they conceded, the kind of the game state being quite open. Ultimately, it's an unlucky ricochet that bounces into the box and a really good bit of play from a quality player that then goes and wins the game. And yeah, story of the season. We've seen it so many times before. I think a lot of the things that we're going to be saying today are things that we've said on quite a few podcasts, but that's just the way that it's ended up panning out.
Ross, I'd just like to stress as well, when I called AJ handsome, that doesn't mean you're not. You're also a very attractive man. I just want to stress that anyway. I just want to get that in on the record.
Good. Yeah.
I'm sure you'd agree.
What's another word for handsome? So, as to call a man, like, you know, beautiful, but that's
beautiful. Well, no, I don't think so. I think you can have a beautiful man. I'd say there are several beautiful men out there. Yeah. I look out and think he's a beautiful man.
Sexy. Yeah.
Sexy. I mean, sexy is, slightly more. I'm not sure that's the same as handsome. Attractive. Buff. I suppose that's more of a comment on the body. What other words can we come up with for handsome? I'd rather do this, to be honest, than talk about football today. I suppose we have to. Anyway, let's get back to hearing from Kieran McKenna.
Yeah, I think it was a really competitive game. You know, I think we certainly played our part in that. It was, I think at least even in terms of the opportunities that we had, Crystal Palace had their opportunity as well, and we know we certainly feel like we were a good value for a goal today, and we're really, really close on a couple of occasions to getting the first goal. And yeah, of course, it's a sickening result. Of course, to come away from home and be as competitive as we were against a strong Crystal Palace side who've been in good form for a good period of time, to do it in a week where we've been away and played 120 minutes in the FA Cup on Monday night and with a depleted squad, to come and compete as we have today, you know, is another reflection of a lot of good things in the group that they're showing. But we also know that we have to keep working to turn those margins in the favour. And I know that's been the story for a lot of the season, but, you know, that's the only path forward. That's the reality of it. We've still got a group that's learning and growing and developing. You still, Julio Enciso playing his second game. Jin Philogene's a few games into his career here. We got the large majority of the group are very, very early in their Premier League experiences and careers. And they're learning all the time. And I think you can see, you know, individual growth and development in individuals and in the group, and we need to try and accelerate that as much as we can to turn the margins in our favour and to try and pick up some wins and some points in the remaining 10 games, starting especially next week.
Kieran sounds a little bit peed off there. I know you called it a sickening result, and you know, obviously he can't come out and go, well, that's it, then he has to keep the line, isn't it, of we've got to keep trying to get better and all that kind of stuff. But certainly felt annoying the result. Anyway, me, Rossi, and I bet Alex as well, we all have the same mindset, because while that's been playing, we've all googled other words for handsome. So I've got some more we can throw in there. Good looking, obvious. Nice looking, basically the same. Attractive, I think we had that. Personable, that's not really, that's more of a character trait, personable. Striking, absolutely striking looking, although that doesn't necessarily mean handsome. You can be striking in a objectively ugly way, I suppose. You could be striking if you've got a massive nose or something. Stunning, fine, well proportioned. Again, not sure that's handsome. It's more of a comment on the body. Well formed, I like that. Again, a bit more of a body thing. Hunky, straight from the 80s, they want their word back. Dishy, hot, gorgeous, drop dead gorgeous, tasty, fanciable, knockout, fit, cute, spunky, and sightly. And also I've got swazzy on here as well. Ross, are there any more words that you've uncovered?
No, that's all of them. Yeah, I don't know. I don't believe I forgot to say gorgeous. Just like gorgeous.
Absolutely.
Gorgeous.
You have a gorgeous beard and you're a well-formed man.
Yeah, you are.
Let's just do this all day. AJ, getting back to the game. So Kieran McKenna, he did sound pretty annoyed after the game. And you can understand why, because he must feel the same as we all do. You know, he's on the sidelines watching this game. And it's a game that we've seen play out so many times. Sickening result. He says all we can do is keep trying to get better. And there's not much more we can say, is there?
No. Stylish and suave, by the way. Well, those are... I don't know if you had those, but yeah, those are the two that came to me. It is. And I think it becomes quite tiring, isn't it? It must be pretty exhausting when you're involved in this internally in particular, and especially in Kieran McKenna's position, where your job is to keep a group of 28 highly competitive athletes more than, yeah, about 28, isn't it, roughly, if you add all the squad together. Yeah. If totally focused, not demoralised in the position where they are the only team in the top four tiers that hasn't won a league game this season. And that must be really difficult, where you're so focused on as well what Wolves are doing, but then you've got to think, oh, well, we've got to make sure that we actually get the results. And you think about things like Cunha and other factors that come into a relegation battle where there's such a big desperation to stay up. And when it is fine margins, in a way that kind of makes it harder, because it's harder to know what to fix. I think if you're in a position, say, where it's, I mean, they've improved, let's be honest, so it's Southampton, who for a lot of this season have just gone and got absolutely schlacked every single week. You can say, we need to fix this, we need to do this better, this needs to improve. And you can go through an entire list and almost check it off. And when it comes to Ipswich, I'm not exactly sure how they would need to improve that. And I'm sure that there will be aspects that the players will come in on training today and throughout this week going into Saturday's game, looking at how to improve it. But they were competitive throughout. They had really good chances. And you look at things like, it's taking their opportunities, sure, but that is hard. And other teams have the issues with that as well. I mean, there were plenty of them. The first 5 minutes in this game, two brilliant clear-cut chances for both teams. It kind of ebbed and flowed in different ways, where Palace kind of got on top a bit, but then they were really sloppy and the fans got on their back and got frustrated. And then Ipswich managed to capitalise. And there were moments where you had players winning the ball in really good positions and getting into those great areas. The one that always will stand out to me from this game was Jack Clark picking Eze's pocket, running down the flank and just playing that ball just behind Julio Enciso, who, again, if that pass is just an inch or two more accurate, it puts Enciso in a great position to score. And there are a handful of opportunities from this game where you can look at that. And Town weren't able to take theirs, and Palace, for the most part, weren't able to take theirs either. It's just one moment. It's one really frustrating ricochet where the ball goes into the box, and then one moment of quality. That's ultimately the difference. And the fact that Town aren't that far off that probably makes it more frustrating in a way.
Yeah, it's so near yet so far, isn't it, with all these things, it feels like, these games. Your impact on Spunky Watson, AJ, is marked, by the way, because for the first time, I think, I've ever seen Stu made reference to an XG stat in his verdict post-game today. So you've obviously had an impact there. Rossi, how was it for you watching on? I mean, I assume you share a lot of the same emotions, but obviously you speak to the fans after the game as well. What was the mood around this one?
Just basically, it summed up our season, this performance, this result, because we're competitive, we had chances, and then just one goal. You know, it was always going to be a one-goal game, I think. I think they get these sort of teams, there's always been that one goal that will just kill us. You know, the cliche out there. But just summed up the season. And there's a few people saying, we're just not good enough. We're not dreadful. We're not Southampton, thank God. But we're just not, just not good enough at moments where we need to find the winning goal, which is, it is what it is. I'm sure people out there are annoyed about that. But we're just not at the races at times. We can be competitive, but we just can't find that killer goal. And it's frustrating. Obviously, we've had some some unlucky stuff with injuries and decisions not going our way. But just the game just summed up our season. And I don't know where we go from here, really. We've got 10 big games to go. But it was a nice sunny day. So that was nice. That was positive.
Oh, it was a beautiful day, wasn't it? I mean, the weekend has been absolutely sensational from a weather point of view. Yeah. It's going downhill now, unfortunately.
Yeah, standard.
AJ, is there anything from the game itself that you want to highlight? I don't want us to spend as much time talking about the game as we would normally, because, as I say, I feel like we've seen this game a billion times already this season. There were some great passages of play, weren't there? I know you were particularly impressed with the pass from Wharton early doors, and that was sensational, wasn't it? Sort of outside of the boot, just a little casual flick. Does that have a chance for, was it Nketiah? I think it was.
Yeah, right at the start of the game.
And Town had chances, didn't they? They created some good openings, but they just couldn't quite get it over the line, literally.
Yeah, I think the first half was not a brilliant watch. I think it might have been three shots on target between the two teams. I can't exactly remember which ones they were. One of them would have been well, you had the two really early ones where I was thinking, wow, this is going to be a Brentford-style basketball game like the one we saw in October. Didn't pan out that way. One where the ball comes to Philogene in the box, he just doesn't make the right connection on it. You're thinking, well, if you can get that in, then again, you're giving yourself that opportunity where Town, in a lot of games, as we've seen, can be really good at the start of games and then they don't score and they fade away. It wasn't really like that, but again, a brilliant opportunity there. I think the setup's worth mentioning as well, because quite a lot of us expected it to be a back five.
Yeah,
kind of more naturally to line up against Crystal Palace, who by default play a five, and it wasn't. It was a 4-2-3-1. And I think that this was, again, probably more of a McKenna screw it, what have we got to lose as well. And it is also his formation. So that made sense. And having Julio and Ciso back was a big boost. We kind of thought he could be back in the squad, but to have him start was really nice. And I thought he was lively. There was a really nice moment where he combined with... not sure if I can remember who it was now. He combined really well with another player to win the ball down the right. Who remembers? I've written it down somewhere. And he then has this nice bit of footwork, sits down England defender and Crystal Palace captain Mark Gahey. It's this little kind of chopped flick. And it is just so good. And you're thinking, wow, brilliant. And he has the shot, and it's a really good shot as well. And Henson does well to keep it out. Yeah, they grow into it after the game. There's more opportunities. They had the spell around the hour mark where that was it, really. That was the point they needed to go and score, because it was their best moment on top of the game. They had the Enciso moment that I mentioned before where Jack Clark wins the ball. There was another one where I think it was shortly after that one where Liam Delap kind of has a shot from a tight angle, gets a lot of power behind it, but just in a position where Henderson, who was really good, by the way, makes the stop. And then another one which is cleared off the line, I think that was Liam Delap, and then it was Philogene's shot which got kind of scooped off the line. I think it might be Mitchell that got rid of that one. So that was really the point where you just needed something to fall for them, and they were denied by a pass that was just a little bit too far behind, a shot where it was just from too tight an angle, and then a ball getting cleared off the line. Those are your three opportunities, and they needed to take one of them. They needed one of them to fall the right way, and ultimately it didn't. That was kind of really the main bits of the game. And yeah, then you come out of it thinking, again, as I've said, there's quite a few players in that team who played well, and you probably go into Saturday's game, as I'm sure we'll touch upon later in the week, I wouldn't go and change that much, to be perfectly honest, but it's still another defeat, and it's one that is a huge opportunity missed given how competitive they were, given Palace's home record, all those different kind of things. That kind of is the story of the game. And yeah, as I've said, it feels like it's a very similar flow to a lot of matches that we've seen so far this season.
They were very complimentary on Match of the Day about Dean Henderson, weren't they? Saying what a good game he'd had. But they could equally have been complimentary about Alex Palmer, Rossi, because I thought, again, I mean, if we look for some kind of bright spots amongst the darkness of the apparently impending relegation, finding Alex Palmer has been fantastic, hasn't it? He looks like a serious talent.
Yeah, he just brings that confidence to that back four, whatever formation we play, back three, back five, whatever. He's some of the saves he's made. He didn't even get nominated for goal of the month, which
goal of the month, save of the month.
Oh, save of the month.
I mean, he's good, but I don't think he scored goal of the month.
No, he's not an option yet.
But that is an outrage, Rossi. You're right. Yeah. How has that not been shortlisted? That's one of the best saves people have ever seen.
Yeah. I don't know. I think because it's little old Ipswich Town. Yeah, that's probably why.
It probably is, yeah.
They just didn't even see it. They went, they're just playing Aston Villa. And, because it was late, minute in the game as well. So it was like a big
moment, wasn't it?
But yeah, he's been fantastic. And I think, I'm sure the defenders are really happy to have him, because there's times where they're ready to pick up the ball, but now he's going, no, I'm going to launch it, because sometimes you have to do that. But yeah, once again, the cliche, where could we be right now if we had Alex Palmer in the net at the start of the season? But it doesn't work like that. But it's a good, thing in terms of long term. Obviously, Arrow, bless him,
Bless him.
Yeah, I saw he's already in Switzerland yesterday. So he's probably just gone, just go away for a bit, mate. And then, Alex Palmer, good signing. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk, isn't there, on social media about, some of the signings we've made, we spun it all on these players, but Alex Palmer has been a good recruit.
Yeah. In terms of trying to pick out some bright spots, AJ, you said there that there were a few players that you thought played well and generally it wasn't a bad performance. Alex Palmer certainly is a bright spot. Anyone else you want to highlight in terms of performances?
Dara O'Shea had to play out position in this game. He's spoken a lot, even in the build-up actually to this match, where he got asked about playing at right back. He's spoken about it a bit in the past. Mm. He kind of reiterated again, I don't mind, it's all right, but I don't want to do it. I want to play centre back. And then he got shot into playing right back again in this game. And he was really good. There were a couple of moments where Eze got the better of him, but that's not really a huge surprise given Eze's quality. And I think he stood up to the challenge quite well. Some really good blocks that admittedly did almost loop into the net, but that wasn't really his fault. He was in the right positions to kind of throw his body on the line, which is always good. Luke Wolfenden, pretty excellent. Again, I'm really happy to have him back in the team. And I think just more than anything, it's great to have someone who's now performing so well at this level, who has the backstory that he has, as we've touched upon a lot in the past. Jens Kajusta, it's just normal, isn't it? Normal Jens Kajusta, which is like a consistent 7 or 8 out of 10 every single week. There are so few games where I look at that he's played under par. He's just so nonchalant and so smooth on the eye and so crucial to what Ipswich want to do in both boxes. So here he was excellent as well. And then probably Calvin Phillips would be another one as well. Maybe a little bit quieter and will be so frustrated about how things were at the end, but it's just a continued improvement to getting him up to speed. But frustrating that we're sat here midway almost through March and talking about Calvin Phillips getting up to the levels that we want him at. So yeah, that's kind of the story of it in terms of the season and the game. Where defensively, lots of positives and some nice bits in midfield for two players that might not be here come the end of the season. So, yeah, at least the big positive from it was that they stood tall defensively against some excellent attacking players who had their opportunities. And, that was the biggest plus of the afternoon in terms of the actual performance.
Jens Kajusta is a well-formed man, isn't he, Rossi? He's a hunky man. Can you have a word with your very smooth? You word with your Naples contacts and just see if we can get him back, maybe permanently.
Yeah, I'll try my best. My Italian isn't, you know, that great. I'll have to admit. So it'll have to be very small Suffolk. Like they'll probably won't understand my accent or Suffolk, accent.
Yeah, but, you're charming though.
Yeah, very true. But I think it's going to be like another like Sixto Peralta sort of loan where you fall in love with him and then obviously we, go down.
Yeah.
We're going down just yet, but go down in brackets. And then, we won't be able to sign him because obviously, we can't afford him for the championship or he just wants to play. I don't know. We'll find out, next time Alex speaks to Jens, maybe we can ask him, what's your future plans and stuff like that. Because I don't know if he has a future at, Napoli. I'd love to have him back because I had the 12th photographer's bib at Palace and I was good old Jens for the day. Talking about 12 is my favourite number. So
is it?
Perfectly, okay. It's my birthday, July 12th, and I just every time I see 12, I just always I like that number. But Jens, just a smooth man on and off the pitch, and we're falling in love with him. But as you always say, never fall in love with lone players because they break your heart, they leave you.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you mentioned in terms of speaking to him, Stu's got an interview with him, which he did a couple of weeks ago, which we were waiting for a suitable moment to put out. As we've already spoken about on this podcast, very interesting journey, very, very smooth, very cool man as well. AJ, anything else from the game itself you want to mention before? Because I think the big talking point is the conversation you had with Luke Wolfenden after the game, which I want to spend a bit of time talking about. So is there anything else game related before we get to that?
I have a concern around the player a little bit at the moment. And I don't want to call them out personally because I think he's done really, really well this season. It's a big step up. I think Jacob Greaves is causing a few question marks in terms of where he's been post-injury, which is always hard because I can't think he's not really a player that's had long time out through injury. And he came into the league, I mean, this is what I said earlier in his career, he's not really been an injury-prone player. I think he's been someone that's kind of played all the minutes that he's been available for at Haarlem when he was out on loan as well. So having him out for an extended period, fairly extended period earlier in the season when he was still adjusting to life in the Premier League, I think it's been quite hard because he stepped up really well. And then post-injury, it's never really been the same for me. And that, you know, there's various extenuating circumstances that come with that. But I think that there probably does come a point where, especially with Cameron Burgess being as good as he has been, and performing to the levels, and we keep saying, well, Cameron Burgess has often done nothing wrong and he's ended up dropping out of the team. That's understandable because he's got a £15 million centre-back ahead of him. But with where Greaves has been in the last few weeks, I think by his kind of own admittance, it's been a little bit under par. So that's definitely one of those bits that I'd be interested to see what happens in the next few weeks. Some of the kind of moments in possession and out of possession, he was probably a lucky boy not to get a red card actually over the weekend. A bit of a harsh one for a shirt pull. But then after that, it felt like he was playing like he wasn't on the booking. And then at times he was getting dragged out a little bit too much. And I've seen that a little bit in the last few weeks where against some top-class attackers, admittedly, it feels like they've got the better of him. So, yeah, with how Cameron Burgess has been playing, maybe there's that debate that has to come back into it. But that's probably one of those positions now where I was very big on Jacob Greaves and very confident that he should be starting every week and he's a brilliant player. And I think maybe some signs from the last few games might suggest that maybe Cameron Burgess deserves another shot given how well he's been playing.
You got any thoughts on that, Rossi? I mean, we've said Burgess is very unlucky to be missing out, given he's never really put a foot wrong and been, again, he's been better than I think anyone thought he would be in the Premier League. You think there's an argument there for bringing him in for Big Jake?
Yeah, I think so. Jake Greaves, he's got potential. He's definitely someone for the long term. I'm sure Ipswich Town as a whole, they'll go, we have spent £15 million on this man, so we need to play him. But when Cameron Burgess has come in, he's been solid and he's done a job. And he's actually out of contract this summer, so it'll be interesting to see what the future does hold for Big Cam. Jake Greaves, there is good things there. But as AJ said, I think since the injury, maybe that... I'm just saying this from my point of view. Maybe he's, you know, head Jake's like, oh, don't want to get another knock or anything like that. There has been moments where he has been, you know, back to his old self, but there... Yeah, as AJ said, he could have got sent off against Palace. There was another moment in another game where I was like, oh, dearie me. And obviously, he had a tough time against Palace at Portman Road. Obviously, Mateta just bulldozed
him. Ran him over, didn't he? Yeah.
Pretty much. But he's a player. I don't think fans are like, fell out of love with him already. But like, you got to, you know, give him some time because he's still, you know, trying to get back up to speed after that injury. And someone for the future, definitely. If we are in the Championship, sorry, everybody, he's going to be fantastic because he knows that league inside out and he's just going to be a future player for us, you know, long term as well.
Yeah, I still think he might end up being town captain one day. but certainly an interesting debate. As you say, Burgess has not really put a foot wrong. Right then, AJ, this Wolfie chat you had, it genuinely is interesting. It's unusual because you always send the audio into the group chat anyway, post-match, so we can chop it up for this. But this time you dropped a line in with it saying this is strong stuff, which prompted me to listen to it all in full straight away. And it is. It's really interesting stuff. But I want you to set it up for us because as a character, Wolfenden is someone it's kind of hard not to like. He's always kind of open with what he thinks. And he's also just a good bloke. I remember you chatting to him after promotion. He already had a couple of Peronis. He was quite happy, you know, just like anyone would be after getting promoted to the Premier League. And equally, that goes the other way. When he's not happy, he's quite happy to say that as well. So what was it like before we listened to this interview? What was he like, you know, in terms of personally after this game?
Yeah, that post-promotion chat is one of my favourite ones, I think, ever. With this, I think you kind of have to set the scene where a lot of players come out after games and after defeats. And understandably, it's very similar to what Kieran McKenna will say. And Kieran McKenna is very diplomatic, very level-headed, very calm. And so I think that can kind of sometimes translate in the wrong way, where, especially in kind of the heat of a disappointing loss, you come out and the players are saying, well, we're disappointed by these things and we have to keep our heads up. And you know, we're all feeling very confident about the weeks ahead and we'll learn from this. And when you have that enough times, Zips, which obviously had this season, understandably, there can be a bit of a reaction, but we need to see it in action. And with Wolfenden, definitely, as I think someone who is, I know, not necessarily an Ipswich fan, he's a Man United fan, isn't he? But he really is an Ipswich lad. I think that there might be kind of a bit more to it in a way where he can definitely see the side of the fans where he wants to come out and actually say, no, this isn't good enough. And he said that actually. It's the first bit that you'll hear in a minute where he comes out quite strong with that. And then fairly kind of unprompted, he spoke about, well, there'll be a line. I won't tease to it too much, but there's kind of an interesting argument. The big thing that frustrated him from the Crystal Palace game, what really disappointed him, and it wasn't something that I really thought too much about, actually, until he said it. And it was a really strong, interesting argument. And it kind of added a different dimension into Ipswich's season, where we constantly look about, is the quality enough? Are they doing this thing right? Is it kind of all the on-the-pitch stuff? And there was actually an interesting point that he highlighted here, talking about the other side of it and a different factor that he thinks that Ipswich need to be able to do better, to be more competitive, to start getting the margins to go in their way. So, yeah, that's kind of the setup for this. And it's a bit of a different player interview, which I really liked.
All right, then, let's hear it. So this is Luke Wolfenden talking to AJ after the defeat at Crystal Palace.
Luke, a disappointing defeat on the road. What did you make of that one?
Yeah, you summed up, really disappointing, annoying. Again, another game that we're banging and just fall short again. It's not good enough, disappointing.
Yeah, and it's slim margins, isn't it? You're so competitive up to the 80th minute and then it's just one ball that bounces kind of the wrong way and that's what ends the goal.
Yeah, I think you said it's a tackle that falls the wrong way. I think it's a tackle that we win. To be honest with you, if we're all smart and we run up to the ref and appeal it and overturn it, you know, you've seen it so many times where a bit of pressure on the ref and then VAR gets involved. So I think it's probably a bit of that. We need to learn the dark arts. You know, only two of us go up to the ref. I think if we all run over to the ref and say it's a foul, I think we'd probably get it. But yeah, it's a ball that falls the wrong way. It's a great finish. They've took a scrappy chance and we haven't. And yeah, we're falling the wrong side of a 1-0.
Was that one of the things that the manager said after the game in terms of appealing for the foul after that goal?
No, he's not said anything about that. I just feel that's come from me. I think that's something all season we've not done well enough. I think the dark side of the game, we can get better at. You know, the top teams, everyone moans that they get decisions, but if you watch them, every single one of them appeals, and we've not done that today. And I'm not saying it changed anything, but all likelihood it could have done. So, yeah, I think that's come from me, not the boss. I think that's just something we can do.
Yeah, I suppose as well it's a case of taking your opportunities because there were chances there to take the points.
Yeah, I think taking opportunities. We had good chances. We had good moments where we've turned over possession half the pitch and unfortunately we've not took the final ball or the final chance. And yeah, they've took their chance from a ball that's... Palmer's made two great saves, but they took... Ultimately, the game winner is a scrappy tackle that's fallen their way and have a lovely, composed finish.
Yeah. How's it been in terms of just trying to keep the positive mentality? Because the last few weeks have been pretty tough, haven't they?
Yeah, it's been tough the last few weeks, but we're taking positives that we're in every game, but at some point that becomes a negative in my eyes. You know, you can be in every game, but so many times a big moment can't keep going the wrong way against you. You've got to step up to that and own it. And to be fair, I think as a group we are doing that, and it's been difficult and disappointing, but as a group we're staying strong mentally and we're going to go right to the last day and see where it takes us.
Okay, some good stuff there from Wolfie. I mean, in terms of kind of open and honest, you can really hear the way he's feeling in that interview. I suppose first point of order, AJ, is there any argument there was a foul on Calvin Phillips that leads to the goal?
It didn't look like it personally when I've seen it in full speed, but the argument, Calvin Phillips feels that there's contact there. That was what Kieran McKenna said. I don't think he was kind of drawn on it too much because he was asked afterwards, you know, Luke Wolfenden said this. Did you feel there was a foul and it could have been disallowed? So I didn't think so massively. It's one of those where if you're given the benefit of five or six different VAR angles, maybe you'll see contact there that suggests that it would be. But from what we were able to see, it didn't look like it. It didn't feel like it. And then again, it didn't feel like it because Ipswich didn't have five or six players or more running towards the referee. There were a couple there. That's where the big debate comes now, isn't it? Is that you can kind of almost swing things if everyone gets up and goes towards the referee and says, oh, well, we think that's a foul. And then if you have that kind of argument, the referees or the VAR team go and look at it, then all it takes is probably finding that one bit of contact, as we've seen happen against Town a lot this season. And then you can go find it. I mean, the example that stands out to me, do remember Everton at home with that Jack Clark overturn there? It felt like a really, well, not a clear and obvious error. And still, because they got up and went to the referee, they went and looked at it. They found something fairly minor and went and overturned it. So one of a few examples there. If Town had gone and done that, would they have been able to have got the goal disallowed? It would have been soft, I think. But there's definitely an argument that it could have happened. And Phillips said he felt the contact.
Any thoughts on that, on the actual incident itself, Rossi, before we get to the wider issue of the Town needing to be better at the dark arts of the game? Do you think there was an argument there was a foul?
At the time, didn't have a clue what was going on, to be fair. I was just trying to get the snappy snaps of Saar's goal, which is obviously not ideal as a Ipswich Town fan, trying to capture the Crystal Palace celebrations and stuff, but you got to capture all the moments. So, yeah, of course, I watched it back and went, yeah, it's pretty soft. Because it's just, you know, Saar is just, or there was the other player, wasn't it? Makeda, what's his name?
Kamada.
That's the one. Him. He obviously, it was a 50-50. He won it. Saar gets it. And Saar had to still do a lot of work. Obviously, goes past Greaves and then, boom, chips over the keeper. So, yes, yeah, it's not much in it, really. I think, once again, you're clutching at straws. Calvin, sorry to say. So, yeah. So I don't really know where the dark arts is coming. Is it more just like making sure to go over to the ref and like just make?
Yeah, I think. I mean, the wider debate here is Luke suggesting that if more of the team had kind of surrounded the ref, which again I'm not really sure that's what you want to see, is it, in a football game, is players surrounding the ref every time that, you know, they think they might have a chance of overturning something. And I guess, again, even wider, what exactly does dark arts mean? Because it's a fine line, isn't it, between gaining some sort of advantage within the rules and then crossing over into the cheating, let's be honest. And we do see a lot, let's be frank, we do see a lot of cheating that goes on in football, particularly, you know, at the highest level, a lot of people doing the triple somersault on pike when they get touched, or going down like they've been shot in the face, when they get brushed in the chest. You know, that kind of thing, which I absolutely hate. But the reason I thought this was a wider, interesting debate is going back a couple of games, back to Old Trafford, there was an incident where Dara O'Shea got basically contact in the chest through an arm or a hand, and he went down holding his face. And I, as I say, that is a side of football I absolutely hate. I can't stand it. It turns me completely off. And it's embarrassing, actually, for the player involved that they would do that. But the amount of people, because I tweeted that's embarrassing, and the amount of people I got responding to me saying, nah, we've got to do more of that. That's what we need to do. And I said, really? And someone actually replied to me and said, yep, win at all costs. Okay, so we're cheating now, are we? Is that where we are? AJ, what's your thought on this?
Controversial one, isn't it? I think that, again, it's not a side of football that I like, especially when, again, kind of fine margins in terms of how you can see it, where sometimes you see something like a player who'll have a shoulder put on his arm and he'll go down like he's been shot. And then sometimes you have things where it's milking it. And you see the top players, for example, who make the most of certain opportunities. And I think it's about making the most of it without overdoing it. And I can think of, for example, I think Salah's quite a good one at this, where if he gets into the box and he feels contact, he knows there's enough for a penalty, he'll go down to make sure that it's checked. He'll go down in a way that's not like totally ridiculous, but he'll show that he's in pain and he's been brought down and that there's contact, because he knows that there'll be enough for a penalty. And it's about doing it in a smart way that doesn't overdo it. And do Ipswich need to do more of that? Yeah, I think so. Because that's how you get results, and it's a results business. It's one of the ways you can probably turn those fine margins. And you don't want to get a reputation, I think, is definitely one thing. You don't want to become, oh, that player dives, that player's an amateur dramatic. And we've said that about a lot of Premier League players, I think, so far this season. Garnacho, for example, and there are others who we've seen kind of throw themselves around against Town. But it is an element of the game now in the 21st century, in 2025, where the top teams, the successful teams, do that to make sure that they get those fine margins that go in their way, especially at the top level of football, where it is two excellent teams going at each other and it is very fine margins that decide those kind of games. You need that. And Ipswich are kind of in a similar position where, okay, not a top team in the Premier League, but one where their games are decided by such kind of slim things. And too many times, the opposition team, who's been at this level before, knows about it and understands that you need a bit of kind of nous to go into certain situations, have been able to do that. And Ipswich haven't needed to in previous years. You don't really need it when you're in League One. You're clearly the best team in the league. You don't need it when you're a team performing at the top end of the Championship and you've got that kind of ability where you can let everything, you can let your talking happen on the pitch. But at this level, where there's so little between teams on the day, but it feels like there is kind of in the division, there's a big gap between the bottom three and the rest of the sides. That's where you need to probably do a little bit more to start to turn those margins in your favour. And yeah, I agree with Wolfen in that sense. You can never overdo it, but that is a side that Ipswich probably have lacked so far this season, I'd say.
Is that something you'd agree with, Rossi, that they need to be doing more of this, to quote Wolfenden, dark arts business?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I think we've done it occasionally. We just don't do it on a regular. I know we did a few times actually in the Championship when we needed to do it. And I think we have done it once or twice this season. But sometimes you don't want to be found out. And then, yeah, you get a player sent off or, you know, referee knows what you're doing there. We've not had opportunities to really time waste this season, have we? Because we haven't been in that position. But maybe just little bits here and there. As you say, you don't want us to be a reputation of a cheating team because there is teams, you know those teams. But we're just, I hate to say again, we are just Ipswich, little old Ipswich in the Premier League. We shouldn't really be here. Some people, teams would go, bloody hell, Ipswich, they shouldn't be here. They were in League One a few years ago. Maybe we just need a bit more nous. But then maybe we've just got two nicer players, potentially. But yeah, it's an interesting debate. One I'm sure a lot of people are discussing, especially with Wolfie's comments. So yeah, we shall see. Maybe the next 10 games, time will bring it out.
I suppose, thinking back, AJ, would Connor Chaplin taking a seat 20 minutes into games, does that fall under dark arts? Or is that, you know, because that was something we saw a lot, wasn't it, last season, in terms of McKenna then using that break to change things on the fly. I worry for the future of the game, though, if we're saying that players now have to be hurling themselves to the floor and surrounding the referee and that kind of thing. But I suppose if that's what they think they need to do, that's not necessarily on them. If they're seeing it work, then it's on the referee and it's on the, you know, the authority in the game to stamp it out, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly that. Do I think the Connor Chaplin one counts as the dark arts? Yeah, a light form of the dark arts.
A light form,
I'd say. Yeah. I don't think that you could kind of push it too much. It's not like they're using it for a huge advantage. At the end of the day as well, when he goes down and Town players come in for a chat with Kieran McKenna, so do the opposition team. They go over and have a chat with their manager as well. So, yeah, it's a tactical advantage for Ipswich because it usually happens when they're under the cosh a little bit. But, yeah, I wouldn't say it's a huge kind of thing. In terms of where it goes with the future of the game, I'd agree with you. It is a concern for sure. But how do you stop it? How do you kind of stamp it out? We're trying to look at different things of having VAR and, I know, for example, goalkeepers are now going to get booked if they have the ball in their hands more than 8 seconds or something. There's a new rule that I think is coming in. And there are different ways of doing it. But ultimately, there's only so far that you can go. And in football, especially in the Premier League, at top level, where there's millions and millions of pounds on the line, where relegation can cost you lots of jobs, can see you kind of fall into obscurity. I'm sure we'll be talking about this one in the few weeks' time, possibly, but look at Luton, who've gone from those kind of riches and now, I'd say, are pretty nailed on to be playing League One football next season. Sunderland have had the same. And there's such a big difference between being in the Premier League and the Championship, between being in the Champions League and the Europa League, between winning the title and falling short again. Millions of pounds, kind of your mid to long-term futures of certain football clubs. So any advantage that you can get over an opposition to make sure that you are the team picking up the points, yeah, sure, you'll get a segment on Match of the Day saying, oh, that wasn't very nice or something like that. But it ultimately gets overshadowed by the fact that your team, in concrete fact, on a table that shows however you want to argue it, that some teams are better than others, that's all that really matters. And is that a concern for the future of the game? Yeah, probably, possibly, in terms of the entertainment value and what people want to see of it. But winning in the Premier League is all that matters. And if Town took that kind of approach and we looked at it and said, oh, they've won that game, but they did a few things there that were a bit controversial, not very good, and they did that enough times to stay up, nobody would care. Nobody would care about how they'd done it. It would just be about the fact that they've done it. And that's the difference.
I think I might care. I think maybe I'm just too idealistic.
So will we be sat here like Ipswich have survived? They've done it in a way that has probably been a little bit controversial. There's been a few kind of a bit of theatrics for a red card and, oh, that goal maybe shouldn't have been disallowed, but they all surrounded the referee and they've stayed up. Would we just be sat here going, well, actually, you know what? They've surrounded the ref. They've been, you know, they shouldn't have really stayed up, actually. No, we'd all be here saying, brilliant, fantastic work. We'd be singing their praises, I think. I don't feel that. And then the start of next season, we'd all be very happy that they're in the Premier League and not in the Championship.
Yeah, I think
these things are all like a microcosm and they're all forgotten.
It's true. I mean, ultimately, it's in black and white, isn't it? Like, if, as you say, if Town stay up through those things, you know, I for one, hopefully quite a few fans would be, I don't really want players cheating for my football side. But then, as you say, at the start of next season, you go, still in the Premier League, aren't we? This is great. And that's ultimately
I don't think that there would be that many fans who'd be looking at it saying, actually, you know what? I didn't really like that. There'd be supporters for sure who would be, but fans want to see their team win. Fans want to see their team in the Premier League. Fans want to see their teams win trophies and go to great away days and try and qualify for Europe and do all these kind of things. They're not going to sit here saying, I didn't like that. They'll probably go on social media and say, brilliant shithousery. Great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what it is. And ultimately, that's what leads to success.
Maybe it's just a wider issue in life that, you know, winning is all that matters, winning at all costs. And damn the consequence. I mean, you could.
But when there's so much that comes with it as well, like it is winning. Of course, it is. It's about getting points on the board and trying to be successful and retiring at the end of a long career with all these different things. But it's about money. It's about jobs. It's about all of these different kinds of things. There's so much that goes into being a top level football club, and falling away from that and falling away from being successful can be seriously damaging on a lot of different levels. So that's where kind of win by all costs comes from, I think.
The culture, it's bloody Donald Trump in it. That's what it is. I mean, there's definitely. I mean, we're edging into a really wider societal debate now as to the trappings of success and
how Sir Alex Ferguson's faultless.
He's
one of the pioneers of it in a way, isn't
he? Yeah, others. Absolutely.
I mean, so many of the great kind of managers as well have kind of been almost pioneers. It's a Mourinho thing as well, isn't it? Lots of Jose Mourinho dark arts, and ultimately one day he's going to retire. We'll look back on him as one of the best managers in modern football.
And but then where does so it end? If you take it to the nth degree, it ends up with a product that's unwatchable, doesn't it? Because there's just so much like people hurling themselves to the floor and bullying the referee and trying to do anything that gives them a slight edge that's kind of on or over the line of cheating.
But that's not Ipswich Town's problem to solve.
No, of course not. No, it's a wider issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
An interesting debate. And one that, you know, I think we could spend quite a lot of time talking about. Rossi, have you got any more thoughts on this before we move on to the bigger picture, the depressing bigger picture?
Yeah, I don't know if that has a ring to it. Dirty Ipswich Town. You know, you've got dirty Leeds, haven't you? You know, Millwall got that reputation. Ipswich Town, though, we're just sleepy Suffolk, aren't we? You never know, though. Kieran McKenna, I don't think he's that sort of manager. He'll go, all right, Wolfie, I want you to do this. Hamari, I want you to dive a moment you can. I don't know. I think we've got to be smart about it, but I don't know. I don't know if we've got it in us.
It's marginal gains, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's different work, you know, a different way of marginal gains that give you a slight edge and this, that and the other. But yeah, very interesting debate. Not so interesting debate, but one we have to talk about, Rossi, is that in the bigger picture, Ipswich Town are now 6 points behind Wolves because they got a draw at Everton. Wolves have got Southampton this weekend. Even without Cooney, you'd have to say they're going to that one as favourites. And obviously, Town have got Forest, which means that come end of play on Saturday, we could be sitting here and talking about Town being 9 points behind Wolves with 9 games left. So I think you've already given us an idea. But how are you feeling about the bigger picture now with 10 games left? Because Town have basically got to do something they've not done all season, and that's string together a bunch of wins.
Yeah, and obviously it's technically 7 points because of goal difference. I swear that's my favourite phrase, goal difference. But I was about to say the F word there, but it kind of bugger you. So because if you don't score enough, you know, you've got to win games obviously, but if you don't score or if you concede too many, then yeah, the goal difference come into play. But 10 games to go now, which is mad to think. We've got 10 games left and we've won 3 games all season, and we've now got 10 games to try to win probably another 3 and hope Wolves don't get any points anywhere. But obviously that draw wasn't ideal. We were actually in the car on our way back to Ipswich, when we were listening to the Everton Wolves game, we were like, obviously cheered the Everton goal because obviously Stu was in the car, so he was happy about Everton scoring. And then when Wolves equalised, went, oh, shit, not good. So it's going to be difficult because we've now got to rely on Wolves dropping points. And I know Leicester are bad, but Leicester are still on the same points as us. So they're in play as well. So don't forget about them. And obviously, we've still got to play Leicester as well. So it's not looking good, I'll have to admit. I want to be honest. It's not looking good. But I'm not defeated just yet. But it's not looking good.
Yeah. I think there are examples of sides, you know, getting out of worse situations. And I think Leicester, you know, when they performed the Great Escape and then went on to win the bloody whole thing the next season, they were in a worse position than they are at the moment, and Town are at the moment. How many games of the 10 left do you think Town need to win realistically, AJ, to give themselves a fighting chance? I guess obviously they need to beat Wolves, they need to beat Leicester.
3 or 4 minimum.
Yeah, which is a worry.
This feels this feels like a pretty pivotal weekend. I think that if we're looking at 9 points, we'll be 9 points, 10 technically, wouldn't it be, with the goal difference to try and overturn. Yeah. This weekend, if Town were to lose to Forest and Wolves, who I do think will beat Southampton, is that Molineux?
I think it's at Molineux.
Ah, smashing! Great. Yeah. I mean, given that, given where that's kind of trending at the moment and where Southampton are, no, it's not. It's at St Mary's.
There we go.
Good, brilliant. Definitely, kind of doesn't overturn the fact that Southampton's only league win since November has been at Portman Road. Mm-hmm. And I think they've drawn twice since then and lost every other league game that they've played. Doesn't fill me with confidence for this weekend. So if this is another weekend where, similar to Tottenham, where it was Town losing and Wolves winning, it feels like the momentum can switch when that happens, doesn't it? Where if we went into this weekend and Town beat Forest and Southampton got a great result against Wolves, then everything changes again.
Yeah.
But it has gone in Wolves' favour a lot in the last few weeks. That the Tottenham game was pretty killer in that regard. And there's only so many times that can happen. So if we're getting to Town need to get 10 points on Wolves, yeah, they've got to play them, but then you've got to get three wins on what they're doing.
Mm.
That becomes, I think, I feel like I'm nailing my colours to the mast a bit there, but it does feel like a bridge too far to try and overturn, given as well that the fixtures that Ipswich have trying to come up with as well, and look what they've got after the break, not exactly easy having Bournemouth, and then once they've played Wolves, they've got Chelsea and Arsenal, Chelsea away from home, hosting Arsenal, then they've got to go up to Newcastle. Sure, the final four are probably favourable fixtures, but you've got to make sure you're in touching distance of Wolves by that stage. So, yeah, the bigger picture I don't think is wonderful. This, I think, will be a really pivotal weekend for Ipswich, given what Wolves have going to Southampton. Again, we'll be able to have this conversation better in 7 days' time when we know what the results are from that one, but it's not great reading, is it?
Forest dead easy, mate. They've just beaten Man City. Only time to beat Liverpool this season. Easy. Yay. 3 points. No problem at all. Any other notes from Crystal Palace? I will say, by the way, I hadn't fully appreciated, boys, that you be able to give me a better, particularly Ross, be able to give me a better insight on this. Just how beautiful, going back to that word again, Crystal Palace's kit is. It looked resplendent. I love that little kind of pattern they've got underneath the actual colours of the shirt. It looks fantastic. Does it look that good in real life up close, Rossi?
Yes, really nice. And I've got, I like Palace. I think the away end isn't great. I have to admit, I know there's a few people who sent me pictures of like my view was dreadful, but it's not a bad little sit up at Palace. Mm. And they're a team who have got, just like Brentford and Bournemouth, they're a team maybe Town could look at in some, because they were a championship side for a while, Palace, and now they've obviously established itself in the Premier League. But going back to the kit, very nice. And I'm sure we'll, Town, obviously, at one stage, we'll see what to ahead of ourselves now. But, we're looking ahead to the new kits for Town. The pink kit, the luck is gone now. We've lost in the pink kit. So we haven't got that to sort of grasp at straws. We haven't got that. Like, let's just plan the pink kit for the rest of the season because we always win or do well in it. But now that record's gone. But we haven't worn the burgundy kit much, have we? My boys, my good old burgundy boys. So maybe we should wear that a little bit more.
Oh, they should start wearing the kits from last season again. Anything else from you, AJ, from the road to Palace and back?
I mean, in terms of the actual match itself, you can kind of point out where there are gaps in quality, where I think in Palace's entire squad you have 8 England internationals, for example, capped and senior levels. I think 6 or 7 of them ended up starting that game, and I think there was a little bit of a debate that came out of that match where people said, well, if Ismail Assar, really good performer, he cost a fraction of what Amari Hutchinson and Jaden Philogene cost, and kind of use that to point at the recruitment a bit, which is a natural response, because when you see someone that costs a fraction of your player's value and they're playing like that, that's understandable. But, I mean, Messi's probably going to be available on a free in a few months' time. That doesn't mean you can go and sign them. Like, there's so much more that kind of goes into transfers and... Yeah, a lot of different factors that come into that one. Probably a little bit premature to start judging Ipswich's transfers compared to established Premier League sides who have that kind of draw. But as Ross said, that's the long-term aim, isn't it? Staying in this division, you've got to give credit to what Palace have done, where they've come up and stayed up, and Brighton have done that, and Brentford have done that. And obviously, Ipswich would love to do that. But whether they do or not, the objective doesn't change. And Palace are, like Brentford, like Brighton, like Forest, probably to an extent. That's the kind of benchmark. And whatever happens in the future now is going to be looking to kind of follow and learn from the lessons that they've learnt as well to go and become established top sides. So good to have that experience. Good to be competitive in that game against top players. And hopefully there'll be kind of a little bit of a learning curve in the long term, regardless of what happens for Ipswich, where they can hopefully get to that stage one day of kind of following in those footsteps.
Don't rule out Messi coming to Town, mate. Get him in the room with Ashton. Get Ashton to give him the big sell. You never know. Ooh, imagine that. friends, obviously there's one more thing we need to remind you of this weekend, and it's bad news, good news time. Bad news, yes, Town might be 9 points behind Wolves by the time we're all said and done on Saturday. But good news, you can come and drown your sorrows and have a group therapy session with your friends and mine at KOA Live at the Bath in Ipswich, which is a post-Forest game this weekend, this Saturday, friends. Doors open at 6. Still tickets available, not many, though. So if you do want to be there, please make sure you grab them as soon as possible. And we think the show's going to get going around 7 o'clock. It's going to be a great night. It's going to be a really good night. Obviously, we'll start by breaking the Forest game down. We'll take questions from the audience. And then we will test Alex Jones. Now, we know Alex, he knows a lot about football, he bloody loves football, but does he know more than anyone else in that audience knows about football? Because we're going to put that to the test with a game that I'm calling Who Wants to Be a Football Mastermind Millionaire? It's basically a mashup of two games, Mastermind and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, because there will be lifelines. We're going to pick someone out of the audience, take on AJ with some devilishly hard football questions and see who comes out on top. And there are props for the winner, by the way. Or props, because we're it's going to be fun. And then we'll have a little interval, 25 minutes or so, to allow people to get their drinks and make a comfort stop, go for a ciggy, whatever. And then we're going to come back, we're going to do live mailbag. You'll have an opportunity to ask us questions about whatever, really, football or not. We'll take those live. And then we're going to finish Rossi with, I think, potentially the highlight of, there we go, he's got it behind him, the gold jacket. That's good. I'm pleased you got it with you, Ross. Just remember to bring it with you on Saturday, because that would be classic, Ross, if you've got it. The live strike, Ross, what can you tell us about the live strike? Can you give too much away? I mean, we know, of course, that the winner, this is big. This is big. It's bigger than anything we've ever done, because the winner of the live strike will become our latest and newest member of the pantheon of the Friend of the Show greats, which we haven't done, as I say, I don't think, since dear old King of the North, John Watson, got crowned a few years ago during COVID. What can you tell us about strike, Rossi?
We need to find the list of all the Friend of the Shows so we can have like a little Hall of Fame.
There's 12, isn't there, I think? I remember that John was the 12th. So you, the winner of this will be the 13th Friend of the Show, yeah. Unlucky for some.
Yeah. I'm going to try my best not to pick players or questions that I can't pronounce, because even though that's hilarious and a shambles, but for me, it's not ideal when I'm on stage in front of people. I don't want to embarrass myself too much. But I've got my questions nearly done. I think I'm having a little think about different ones, but I'm really looking forward to it. It was a good fun last time. And obviously this is a bigger crowd, a bigger venue. So if you haven't got your tickets, this is me calling you now. Come on, come along. It'll be a good night. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be, if you're at the KOA1, I don't know how many survivors of KOA1 will be there on Saturday, but this is going to be well over double the size of that event. Much, much bigger scale, this one. As befitting Town being in the Premier League, of course. And it's just going to be an opportunity, as I say. It's just going to be a good fun night. Everyone gets involved, hopefully, because it's going to be the podcast that goes out next week anyway. So it's your chance to actually be on the podcast. The bar will remain open after we finish, so we can all have a drink together and have a chat. And it's just a celebration, I guess, of the community of KOA, as well as being a bloody, ruddy, bloody, ruddy good night. Hopefully, Town will have beaten Forest and everyone will be bang up for it. Because walking onto the stage with them 9 points behind Wolves is going to be a tough sell. But hey, still be fun. The other thing to mention, of course, our sponsors for the evening, Ginger Pickle, Tony Southgate will be there. If you want to say hello to him and thank him in person for sponsoring the show and rubbing his big beard, I'd suggest you do that. And then, of course, our other sponsor, Stardust Spirits. Use the code KRA at stardustspirits.co.uk for 20% off all their excellent drinks they've got on offer there. We're getting hands on our samplers hopefully this week, boys. I've got all sorts of different rums to try. You've got some single malt whiskey. You boys have got some incredible concoctions of gin and vodka and all sorts. Absolutely tremendous stuff that Gary's doing with Stardust Spirits. So get involved with them if you can. Boys, anything else to mention before we go off and crack on with our Monday?
Who's going to? I'm never really having a thing. International break soon.
Yeah.
Oh. Don't do that. Lots of squads being announced, so keep your eyes on that one. The only one that people care about is Liam Delap going to get that England call up. That'll be
Friday. Yeah,
it is Friday. I talk sport lied to me, so keep an eye out for that one. That'll be really good fun if he's in that.
Rossi, anything else from you?
Nah, done and dusted. To be fair, I think we've done a good length of the pod. So hope everyone has a good week. I can't wait to see you at the Baths in Ipswich. So once again, get your tickets.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Rossi. Well, the first part of the week is in the books, friends. It doesn't look good. We can't deny that for Ipswich Town. But hey, there's still 10 games left and there's still KOA Live 2 to look forward to. So have a great week, whatever you're doing. We'll speak to you later on this week. And then hopefully we'll see you in person at the Baths in Ipswich on Saturday night. Have a good one.